Welcome to consideration number 10 in this practice of deep listening. This is all about what happens when we call people into a circle. So circles in these current times are being used for organizations to explore innovative ideas, for conflict mediation through courageous conversations, for communities to hold problem-solving discussions, or for parents and teachers to address anti-bullying campaigns. One, who's the author of Calling the Circle, has richly influenced aspects of my own approach to council work. Christina suggests that a round configuration of listeners and speakers creates a sense of community. It holds our chaos, it links us to the ancient, it surrounds us with the sense of containment, and it unfolds the communication process as if the circle were really a compressed spiral. Christina makes it clear that gathering in a circle is not a guarantee that all our problems will be magically sorted out. On occasions, the circle is simply a place for some degree of angst to be aired. The combination of a circle format and the intent to listen well can sometimes set up expectations that only well-behaved content will enter the space. In reality, it does not play that way. The circle is a container where fierce creatures can be let loose. While the application of a circle depends on the situation, the intent is always the same. To move through an interactive process of sharing, to garner the group wisdom, to listen to contrasting perspectives, and to sustain the atmosphere of respect and mutual support. I've come to appreciate that the circle also teaches us about the other ways that we humans communicate, not just through words. Perhaps it's my own bias, but I always feel a transforming energy rush faster into the room when words are counterbalanced by sound, music, and even silence. In my role as a facilitator within organizational events or gatherings, it's not always appropriate to use sound, music, or silence. In some of those situations, participants in a circle may be stuck in the dynamics of bargaining, negotiating, trading ideas, and settling on acceptable compromises. But even in these contexts, listening can prevail. Sometimes I've noticed how competitive communication in a circle can resemble a sporting match. The first quarter usually begins with an obstinate thought and feeling being tossed onto the field, and then participants take sides, and the group becomes polarized. The larger intent of coming to mutual respect and support, or moving closer to clarification, or discovering something unknown, is typically forgotten in favor of defending a point or advancing a position. Now, there's nothing inherently wrong with a discussion circle having a certain sportive element to it. Any juicy communication exchange has the feel of play and interplay as we wrestle toward understanding. I like to remain alert for stages when the group is caught in a divisive rut and two factions are merely playing the game from the motive of attaining domination. Some members of the circle may even want to be overpowered and will set up situations where they can acquiesce to a stronger party. In the long run, the clustering into stronger and weaker poles is a far cry from the deep agreement and rich consensus possible in a circle. I regard consensus as an ideal achievement in a circle process. It feels really different from groupthink. According to the Oxford Dictionary, consensus is an agreement of different organs in effecting purpose. Consensus is an agreement of different organs in effecting purpose. This type of consensus implies an inclusion of dissimilar and even divergent perspectives. Consensus is certainly distinct from a state of synthesis, a playing it safe mindset, attained through conformity and the limiting of individuality. even when a gathering is divisive, the intention is not to obliterate distinctions, but to reach toward a state of agreement where different organs work together for a common purpose.